Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
The Athletic.
It's time for another Straight Outta Cobham. This is the Chelsea FC podcast from The Athletic. On this episode, Anfield heroics, Reese's red, shades of grey, Christensen's contract, Champions League draw confirmed, and Kurt zooms across London, but Sevilla's crown jewels stay in Spain for now. Available for free wherever you get your podcasts and ad-free on The Athletic, this is Straight Outta Cobham. Hello, listener. Hope you're well. You can stop cursing Anthony Taylor now. It's the start of a new week. I'm Matt Davis-Adams, joined by the returning Simon Johnson. Hi, Simon.
Hello.
Dominic Fifield's also with us. Hi, Dom.
Good morning, Matt.
Let's get to Liverpool then.
Chelsea's turn to threaten from the corner quadrant. Big Rom's in there. Havertz with the flick. It's in! Yes!
It's a penalty. It's a penalty to Liverpool, and it's a red card for Reece James. It's a straight red card for the Chelsea defender.
It's into a Jota. He's going to blow. Bravo, Chelsea. And you can see where the clenched fists are, folks. That is some achievement. 10 men for 45 minutes. No doubt who is and who should be happier with the shared points here.
We defended with a lot of resilience, lot of quality, always active, lot of courage, and I absolutely loved it. And I told the team that this is fantastic and they should be proud of what they did.
Liverpool 1, Chelsea 1 at Anfield this past Saturday. The Blues ahead through Kai Havertz before Mo Salah equalised from the penalty spot after Reece James' handball. Don't take my word for it, though. Here's Simon's report from Anfield.
And the final whistle has just gone at Anfield. It's 1-1. Chelsea players seem very happy with their day's work. My word down to work for that point. Chelsea fans are in the away end in very good voice, and understandably so, because at half-time, being down to 10 men with the Reece James red card and the penalty, it looked very much like a grim second half awaited, but Chelsea displayed the characteristics that won them the Champions League. Defensive rearguard action, were in control for most part. Liverpool threatened a few times, many made some good saves, but I think a real shout out for Andreas Christensen, as I wrote in the week. He's about to sign a new contract. He showed just why Chelsea are going to reward him. Antonio Rudiger, another one that is in contract talks. And Chelsea need to get him over the line too. But these two teams certainly aren't friends. I look forward to the rematch later on in the season. But Chelsea will leave Anfield point better off than perhaps they would have thought at half-time. All the talk will be of Anthony Taylor, as per usual in a Chelsea fixture. When will this referee actually have a quiet game as far as Chelsea are concerned? Anyway, good result for Chelsea as they applaud the away fans and on to the next game.
Let's start our look back with the red card. Controversially, Dom, I think it definitely was one. Do you agree?
Yes.
Good. Okay. We'll be back again next week.
I have a certain amount of sympathy over the speed at which the decision was made by Anthony Taylor when he went over to the VAR monitor. It did appear to be okay. The incident was being played out as he approached the monitor, but it appeared when he actually got there, all he saw was a static image of the ball hitting Reece James's arm. But I can only assume that in his ear, he's either seen it as he's approached, or in his ear that the VAR is telling him, look, it's brazen. He's moved his arm. He's scooped it. basically off after the ball had bounced off his thigh. And it was that second, it was a scooping motion that has cost Reece James the red card. It's, the rule is rubbish. The rule is ridiculous. It's, I thought we were trying to get rid of the double jeopardy thing. You know, we do with professional fouls, but we don't with handballs on the goal line. So I have, again, sympathy with Reece James in terms of the rule, but I think it was applied correctly as much as everybody would like to try and undermine Anthony Taylor and the frustration given this sort of track record of incidents against Chelsea in recent times. But I do think he got that one right, unfortunately.
Simon, the thing about looking at the monitor, I feel like that is basically there to cover for the on-field referee, because every time a referee goes to the monitor, they overturn their decision. So is it basically the VAR in charge saying, either you've missed this or you've got it wrong, you're going to have to overturn it, but just go and have a look at the monitor just so we kind of tick that box, because it was so brief that Taylor was over there.
Yeah, it seems to me that they still haven't nailed down. There doesn't seem to be a consistent sort of basis. Some, you know, how many times have we actually seen a referee even go to a monitor? And it did sort of feel like in this instance that it was like, oh, this is a penalty, Anthony. Just go quickly, have a look at the monitor. But basically, it's a penalty, because the speed in which he sort of looked at it, there wasn't like loads of angles that he just, like, as Dom said, they just sort of saw this stilled replay. I just find it all very inconsistent, still very inconsistent.
But was the decision right, Si?
I think it probably was. It was very unfortunate. It wasn't because the confusion, of course, is that the ball deflected off his thigh onto his arm. But when Twitterati were going mental, because it was Anthony Taylor, I was, and including on my Q&A, I mean, my Q&A was just, there wasn't really any questions. It was just full of lots of charming expressions about Anthony Taylor. But I did sort of like dip my toe in the water with one reply and just said, as Dom mentioned, this it was that arm motion. I don't know why I'm doing the arm motion on an audio. But listeners, I'm doing an arm motion. And that's what, it wasn't the first instance of I'm rambling here. You can tell I've been off for a few weeks. It wasn't the first instance of a handball that got me. It was the second. It was that split second afterwards when his arm came through, and that's where I thought, if he goes to the monitor, if he goes to VAR, then he's in trouble. My biggest disappointment was what it did to the game, actually, because the first half was fantastic, sort of real end to end stuff. And you knew, obviously, and understandably, the second half would then become defensively attack. Chelsea did it brilliantly, but it just took away from the occasion a little bit, because who knows what that second half would have brought with 11v11.
Agreed on that. But I do think that we should... Reece James is very unfortunate, because all that's happened in a split second from point blank range. The Chelsea personnel that are culpable in this are Marcus Alonso and potentially Edouard Mendy at the back post. Why they jump together and why Alonso nods it out of Mendy's hands is baffling. And then Kai Havertz, unfortunately, just goes to sleep. And Mane is up and beyond him and prodding that shot, which rebounds up off Reece James's thigh onto his arm. And seconds later, or split seconds later. So I think when they look back on it, Reece James is the fool guy. He's the unfortunate one, but actually others have been culpable in getting him sent off.
Very true.
Is there any chance that Chelsea will appeal it, Simon? Did Thomas Tuchel mention anything about that post-match? And also, do you think that there might be a fine coming for the way that the players surrounded the referee in the aftermath of it?
There was no mention of an appeal. I think the way Tuchel talked about it, he kind of sort of intimated he was obviously disappointed by the decision, but there was also, he seemed to give some kind of leeway that he kind of understood why it was given. He was kind of hedging his bets a bit. I certainly haven't heard anything about appeal, but like I said, he wasn't asked about it. As for Chelsea players' reaction, yeah, possibly. I mean, both set. I haven't asked the FAI this either, Matt. So, but there were quite a few sort of moments between the two sets of players, wasn't there? It was it took me back to Chelsea Liverpool of old. It really was kind of that needle, that rivalry between the two sets of players. And the Anfield crowd was particularly loud on Saturday. Maybe it felt louder because there hasn't been a crowd there for this fixture for a couple of games, but they were really up for it. It felt like a title game, even though we're only three games in. And yeah, Chelsea stood up to the challenge. I thought in terms of their results so far this season, it was their best result by some distance because of all the circumstances.
So Simon was at Anfield. Dom, you wrote a piece with Danny Taylor for The Athletic looking at the key points of the game. How did Chelsea readjust tactically? And I mean, the one good thing about the red card was that it came right at the end of the first half. So it gave them a full 15 minutes to plan what they were going to do next. He didn't have a 10, 15 minute assault from Liverpool on 10 man Chelsea as they were regrouping.
Yeah, I guess that's a test of a manager's ability to remain calm when he feels as if everything's going against him, because emotions were running so high. I mean, the protests continued down the tunnel. He had spent an awful lot of time shouting at the fourth official saying it's too much. And that presumably is a referral back to the sort of double jeopardy issue around James's dismissal. But yeah, look, at least they've got... Not the biggest, because obviously going down to 10 men's a nightmare, but actually losing N'Golo Kante at halftime as well was a huge, huge problem for Chelsea, given that, you know, if you wanted anybody on the pitch when you're about to embark upon 45 minutes with 10 men against a fellow contender, you'd probably want Conte on there. So he retired as well. At least they had experience and know-how to bring on in Kovacic and Thiago Silva, although Thiago would have been rusty. I thought he did pretty well, I think there were one or two initial issues that he had, but he got into the flow of the game and was rugged in everything he did. And when you've got an Azpilicueta who has been playing right wing back in some recent games as well, who can flit in there, then at least you can keep your basic defensive shape in order. And the second half performance didn't actually surprise me. I thought, we know Chelsea can be brilliant defensively under Thomas Tuchel, and they have that resolve. So the fact that they were able to nullify Liverpool and restrict them really to long range efforts, pretty much one header from Jota aside, I think, was testament to their sort of their experience, their know how, their sheer nous on that side. I think when you look back at that game, I don't think there were no surprises to Chelsea's resilient second half. As I say, we can expect that. What was it hugely encouraging, I think, from the entire performance was the chances they created in the first half after going ahead, where Lukaku was acting as a sort of deeper pivot almost and allowing these runners, Havertz and Mount, to get off him and sprint into enemy territory. And they really should have doubled their lead. They should have trebled their lead really before half time. It should have been out of sight, in which case Liverpool wouldn't have come back even against 10 men. And it's just something that Chelsea are going to have to learn. They have to appreciate, their midfielders have to appreciate, they now have a direct option, which they didn't always take up. There were times when Lukaku was pleading with them to play the ball over the top so he could run into space, and they didn't play that option as much as they might have done. But those runners also, as we mentioned, I think last week after the Arsenal game, they're going to relish playing with him because he will create chances and space for them to exploit. And they did that brilliantly. And it was just their finishing that was slightly awry. And maybe the decision on the final ball a couple of times where I think Havertz might have been played in, or Lukaku might have been played in rather than Mount, etc. But that will come. And when you put those together, the defensive surety and the fact they've got this potent attacking threat now, then that's why Chelsea are contenders this season.
Yeah, I think they proved that undisputedly on Saturday. If we spin back to Kante, Simon, he was the focus of your post-match piece. Slight concerns that we're getting back to that problem that he had in the season under Frank Lampard, where he could just never get himself fit. But also, is this possibly quite well timed in that you can just say, well, don't go on international break and rest it for a couple of weeks and we'll see where we are then.
Yeah, I think if he's going to get an injury, of course, not before half time at Anfield, that timing wasn't good. But yeah, before the international break, I mean, I asked Tuchel about it, but he was all confused. I was going, oh, that's the second time he's been injured in a month. He went, two injuries? I was like, yeah. And then he explained why he had an injury earlier in the month. It was a bit odd. So I didn't get round to sort of getting to ask him the awkward thing about press conferences on Zoom. We never got round to the, well, how serious is it? Because then I suddenly got muted, which perhaps,
a blessing.
Perhaps is a good idea in general. I think my wife would like that option. Anyway, getting back to the point, something I struggle to do. Conte, it is a concern because 44 starts in two seasons, is now 45 with the game at Liverpool. It's not enough. And it's a sign of his, because he's that good, it's not enough. But it's a sign of his fragility since that Europa League final. And it is a worry, not just Conte as well. Jorginho, when he went down, and this is kind of the argument I was making the piece, he got up and was limping. He was sort of going, oh, you know, could we be losing Jorginho? And suddenly you're sort of really seeing this fragility of this position. I mean, we've been talking about it already during the window because of Chelsea's interest in certain players like Declan Rice, whatever. But it is a worry because they've got three players now. With Billy Gilmore on loan at Norwich, they've got three players for a two-man position. So you're only one injury away from suddenly exhausting two people. It's going to be a very intense season. And if there is a serious injury or Conte keeps picking up little niggles, it does leave a question mark over how strong this area of the pitch is for Chelsea. I mean, Chalobah came on in the final few minutes for Jorginho and looked, you know, completely cool, calm, measured, like the occasion wasn't too much for him. And he's clearly a player of ability. But Tuchel himself has gone on record to say he sees him more as a centre-back and doesn't really want to be messing around too much with putting him in different position. He actually said, oh, it's all very well playing on loan in midfield at lesser clubs, but this is the Premier League, much higher level, you've got less time on the ball, etc. So I am a little bit concerned that if not just Conte, I'm talking Jorginho, Kovacic as well, if one of them gets a notable injury, even if it's 6 weeks, you know, that there's an awful lot of games that can be played in those 6 weeks, and that's a huge burden for the other two to bear. Of course, there's been chat about Saul Niguez, Atletico Madrid. I do sort of think that Chelsea could do with getting a body over the line before the window shuts.
Time for our weekly Ben Chilwell question. Another Ben Moxham is this week's poser. He asks, do we officially open Chilwell gate? This game was perfect for him, yet Alonso preferred again. Well, Thomas Tuchel's kind of answered that one for us. He said post-match, Chile needed his time in training to adapt to the intensity. He's now ready, but it wasn't the time to push him in the cold water. Cold water, chilly. Lovely stuff. Something else to come out sort of in the aftermath of the game, Simon. A new contract for Andreas Christensen might be in the works, and he proved how worthy of that he is in this game.
Yeah, I thought he's phenomenal. I mean, I've always thought that Christensen, I've been one of the sort of ones on the pod that's sort of been sticking up for him, even although admittedly he's had his tough games. But I always sort of thought back to when he first broke through into the team and you could see he had quality. But I think confidence did take a dip. But he's playing for a manager that really, really rates him and speaks openly with him. And I think that has made a big, significant difference. Also, there was the timing. If you remember, Silva picked up an injury quite early on in Tuchel's reign. And that gave Christensen a run of games. But yes, Chelsea have been... They started talks a few months ago, and now it's very close to being completed. There's a few sort of minor details to be ironed out, but yeah, 4-year deal with an option for another 12 months. It just sounds to me like it's a matter of when these little issues are sort of ironed out. Christensen wants to stay. Tuchel, in his post-match press conference, was asked about Christensen, repeated how much Christensen loves Chelsea and so on and so forth. So I can't see anything going wrong. And that would be a significant boost, I think, because when you've got Silva, Rudiger, Azpilicueta, with only 1 year left as well, I think just getting one over the line and one of your sort of best sort of younger ones of that contingent, I think that is significant for Chelsea to get that deal done.
Yeah, speaking of Azpilicueta, congratulations to him on his 300th Premier League appearance. Came on his 32nd birthday, and the cake that they gave him on the coach home looked very nice too. Now, before we talk Champions League, Kurt Zouma's departure was confirmed on Saturday. He's gone to West Ham for the best part of £30 million. Dom, this strikes me as one of those rare instances of a good deal for all parties.
Yeah, I think so. I think he'll play more at West Ham. Having watched West Ham at the weekend, there is an obvious slot for him to fill in their back line. So he'll play regularly, which will enhance his prospects of getting into the French squad, etc., and kick his career along. He did brilliantly when called upon on the occasions he was called upon at Chelsea. On numerous occasions, he did well. But that's a good fee for a player that wasn't going to be a key part of the team this season under Tuchel. I think it was a lengthy negotiation. He's got a very good deal out of it by the sound of things from West Ham. I think he's become the highest earning player or highest earning defender, certainly. And I'm sure his career will kick on. And, you know, I think he'll go with some fond memories from his time at Chelsea over the years since he signed from Saint-Etienne.
Meanwhile, according to David Ornstein's Monday column in The Athletic, the deal for Jules Koundé to come to Chelsea from Sevilla is off after the Spanish club bumped up the price. Simon, is this just a bit of last-minute posturing? There's talk in the piece that Chelsea might revisit it in January, potentially.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like it's not just posturing. It sounds like Chelsea aren't particularly happy with the goalposts being moved. They thought that a fee had been agreed, only for Sevilla to suddenly up it by €15 million. With this transfer window, you feel like you can't rule anything out because it's such a bonkers window. But the information, particularly that David got, sort of really did intimate that this is not going to happen, which is significant because you've just let Kurt Zouma go, and everyone assumed, oh, well, Kurt Zouma going, that meant that Koundé's coming in now, that the deal's going to happen. Perhaps the fact that Zouma's sort of move to West Ham has dragged on so long, so late into the window, has had an impact. Sevilla are worried about the options to replace him and have rejected some of the players that have been proposed to them. And I suppose that's within their right, you know, it's their player. Koundé, by all accounts, is not very happy. He can understand why. He's basically all summer been expecting this move to go through, only for it to collapse, it seems, at the 11th hour. But given that Chelsea have effectively had Koundé sort of wrapped up in terms of his desire to move to Chelsea, you wouldn't be surprised if this is revisited at another point. It's just whether Chelsea and Sevilla can perhaps sort of kiss and make up a little bit. And who knows, it might happen before Tuesday night, but from what we're hearing, it's very unlikely. But this could be great news for Chalobah, of course, because with Koundé's arrival, you did suddenly sort of think, well, how many games is he going to play? And perhaps that's one of the reasons why he's been kept around rather than loaned out, is with the possibility of Koundé not going through.
Simon, the other transfer thing I wanted to ask you about was Callum Hudson-Odoi, some reports linking him with a loan move to Borussia Dortmund.
Yeah, there is interest from Dortmund. You can understand why. It makes sense. They've lost Jadon Sancho, and Hudson-Odoi, you know, is very sort of Jadon Sancho-esque. And he could understand why Hudson-Odoi, who a few weeks ago couldn't have been told in more uncertain terms that he was going nowhere, but you can understand why after a couple of weeks of this season that perhaps his camp and Callum have sort of thinking, well, perhaps it's actually best to consider these kind of things because he's not played a single minute since the Super Cup final. And you do wonder when he will get a game. From Chelsea's point of view, do they risk letting him go though? Because as Tuchel said after the match, that on the eve of the match in the pre-match press conference, when he was asked about Hudson-Odoi's future, he didn't really want to let him go because there's so many games this season and can't afford to for this squad to get much smaller. But Dortmund, the question is, though, can they afford... One, can they afford to sign him? No, because Chelsea's asking price will be ridiculous. So then you're coming down to a loan, and it's still... That's still quite a significant financial outlay for them if sort of Hudson-Odoi's wages are taken into account. So I'm not ruling it out, but it's not going to be a straightforward one.
More on that on Thursday's show when the transfer window will have closed. Listener, you're probably aware that Chelsea are the champions of Europe. Well, they begin their defence of the crown next month. Next today, we'll take a look at who the Blues have been paired with after Thursday's group stage draw.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So we now know that Chelsea will be in Group H of the Champions League this season alongside Zenit St. Petersburg, Malmo and Juventus. My hot take, Dom, could have been worse.
Yeah, you'd fancy Chelsea and Juventus to progress fairly comfortably from the section. There's an irony that Juventus are in there, given the last time Chelsea defended a European Cup, they were also in the group, and that I think anyone who was there will remember that particularly torrid evening in Turin at the new Juventus Stadium, where Chelsea were utterly overwhelmed, and Roberto Di Matteo was effectively informed that he was about to lose his job in the corridor outside the press conference. I think it was. I remember walking back across the arrivals hall in Gatwick in the small hours of that morning, and Roberto was there with a member of the club staff, sort of trudging with that haunted look on his face across the empty arrivals hall towards the coach that was taking him back to Cobham, where he was formally sacked. I don't think anything of that's going to be happening to Thomas Tuchel, let's put it like that, in the weeks ahead. Zenit, Russian football's on a... Domestic football seems to be on a decline. Zenit weren't particularly... Haven't been particularly impressive in recent times. And Malmo, although Chelsea played them in the Europa League last 32, they beat them home and away, albeit there were some uncomfortable moments across the two legs, but generally speaking, they had way too much for them. So they'll progress, I would have thought, without too many issues. And the fact that you're playing Juve, albeit a Juve without Cristiano Ronaldo, will add a bit of pizzazz to the group stage, which can, let's be honest, be a bit mundane in the modern setup.
Actually, the fixtures have worked out pretty well too, I think, Simon. Zenit at home to start, you get Malmo in the doubleheader, and then Zenit to finish. That's probably how Chelsea would have planned it if they were given the choice.
Yeah, it's not bad at all. You could question whether going to St. Petersburg in December is going to be... It was going to be a bit colder than it was in the World Cup in 2018 when I was there. But yeah, there's a real opportunity to try and get qualification virtually wrapped up, particularly with that doubleheader. I think the doubleheader with Malmo is the real bonus, because if they repeat what they did in the Europa League, as Don mentioned, and Chelsea are a better team than that side was. And then that's exactly what you want, because you want sort of dead rubbers at the end of the group stage. One, it gives you a chance to rest key personnel. It also gives an opportunity for those fringe players that are perhaps upset about game time and to give them a few minutes. Yeah, I'd be surprised if Chelsea repeat 2012-13 and fail to defend their trophy within the group stage. That was one of the most... When Juventus came out of the pot and then Shakhtar's ball came out in the draw, I was just like, oh, this could be a history revisited. But no, they were drawn another group. And yeah, I think Chelsea should be pretty happy with what they got.
Zenit aren't Shakhtar. Zenit got one point in the group last season.
Well, Shakhtar aren't Shakhtar either. You know, you sort of think back to that Shakhtar.
They're not even playing
you think
him
about tonight. That Shakhtar team. You know, Fernandinho, Willian,
decent.
I just named a couple. I mean, they were really entertaining. I mean, the two games between those sides were fantastic. I mean, Chelsea's bad as that knockout was. They actually played quite well in times in that group stage. And of course, they should have beaten Juventus at home. You can forget Oscar's debut, those two brilliant goals, and they should have won that game. They sort of collapsed in the second half. I just think without Ronaldo as well, that is kind of, Chelsea may have regret him coming to England for their Premier League chances, but it's kind of helped them improve their chances of getting the better of Juventus as well.
Just looking at the odds, Dom, Chelsea fourth favourites to win the Champions League behind PSG, Man City and Bayern Munich. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, look, I just wonder whether come the spring, the Premier League becomes more of a priority, possibly just because of what happened last season, what Chelsea managed to do last season. It's they've got quality and depth. They've got strength and depth. They can compete on two fronts. Don't get me wrong, but I just look at. I mean, look, PSG have to win the Champions League this season. They simply have to, given everything that's happened this summer. And Manchester City will be on a bit of a mission on that front as well, given what Chelsea did to them in Porto. So you can never really rule out Bayern Munich either, just because of the quality that they have as well. So it's all a bit random at this stage. It all depends on what the knockout brings. But I think that's fine for Chelsea. Just nestle in there and let the others draw the attention and then steamroll in the knockout phase.
Well, as we mentioned, the first game in Group H for the Blues is against Zenit. Takes place at Stamford Bridge on the 14th of September.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Elsewhere in Chelsea news, the under-23s suffered their first defeat of the season. They went down 2-1 to West Ham on Sunday. West Ham got their winner 9 minutes into 16 minutes of stoppage time after an injury for one of their players. Brian Fiabema had got the Chelsea goal. The under-18s continued their fine start to the PL South campaign. They beat Norwich 3-1 on Saturday. Ronnie Stutter got two of those. Great name. Definitely one to watch this season too. It seems that Dujon Sterling set to join Championship side Blackpool on loan for this season. He's previously had loans at Coventry and Wigan. And there were goals for Tammy Abraham and Olivier Giroud in Serie A on Sunday night.
Let's not forget Tiamoue Bakayoko's big move to Milan potentially going through after signing a new contract at Chelsea, allegedly. Wow, let's kick that one down the pole. What's Liam's favourite phrase, isn't it, at the moment? Let's give someone a new contract and sell them next summer.
Yeah, hopefully. Ross Barkley? any interest at all in Ross Barkley from anybody or Danny Drinkwater? They're just going to be kicking their heels at Cobham, aren't they, for the entirety of this season?
Barkley is remarkable, isn't it? Barkley is remarkable. You'd think that... Well, interesting to see what happens before Tuesday, but my word, that career.
Yeah, I think... Drinkwater's being, I think Reading is going to join the It's Babar Akhman, isn't it, that's gone to Reading. So I think it's going to be a Chelsea Giro double act potentially. But yeah, Ross Barkley, how the once potentially mighty have fallen. It's quite a sad story, actually, sort of looking at a player that had it all and has not made the most of it. And it's a pretty damning indictment that no one is really coming in for him. I'll be surprised if he doesn't end up somewhere in some desperate 11th hour move, with Chelsea probably paying the vast majority of his wages just to get him out of the building.
Yeah, we'll see on Tuesday, I suppose. Right, to finish, a question that came in from Twitter from New Style. It got me thinking. Top Chelsea performances with 10 men. Barcelona Champions League semi, an obvious one, but some great ones over the years. I recall a victory over West Ham after Manish got sent off. That was one that you flagged, Simon. It wasn't one that I could recall, but you were there on the day.
Yeah, I was. And people forget that, because Chelsea dominated that title race from pretty much the start, but they were starting to have a bit of a wobble. And yeah, Manish, one of the great loan signings of all time, he got sent off, I think, after about 9 minutes.
And then Manish goes down, Scaloni goes down, and the West Ham players are furious. It's a red card for Manish! Well, Chris Foy went straight for the red card. Scaloni's gone down injured, and referee Chris Foy deems that as a straight red card.
And then James Collins put West Ham in front, and there was a genuine sort of feeling in the ground. You could feel that tension of like, oh, you know, this could be a significant day in the title race. I think United were playing later that day, and they already closed the gap to within 7 points. But of course, if Chelsea went on to lose and then United won, it would be down to 4. But then it was just a remarkable display of 10 men just battering West Ham. You had no idea that Chelsea were down to 10 men. Of course, Drogba and Crespo were really tearing West Ham asunder at the top of the pitch. And how many teams score 4 goals with 10 men? I mean, it was a tremendous point. But that was Mourinho at his pomp. You know, he went for it. He went on the attack. How many managers would keep sort of Drogba and Crespo on the pitch when you've lost a midfielder? So yeah, that's one performance that stuck out in my mind.
Drogba tries a low shot. Crespo! They've done it again! Drogba's involved this time! The new strike partnership works wonders for Chelsea!
Now, would Jose Mourinho do that in 2021, I wonder? Exactly. Dom, any advance on West Ham or Barcelona?
Well, I asked Liam, because he has a horse in the race, a three-year-old Liam recalled a game between Blackburn and Chelsea in 1998, where it was 2-2, and Graham Lasso and Sebastian Perez were then sent off, so 10 apiece. So I'm not sure whether that counts or not.
Well, that action by Graham Lasso speaks for itself. The retaliation after the earlier foul by Perez. And if you raise your hand, you know the consequences. Lasso's temperament lets him down.
But as it transpired, I think it went 3-2 to Blackburn, then Tore Andre Flo scored twice very late on to win 4-3. So that was Liam's choice. When you asked me that question in preparation for this, I genuinely couldn't remember any Chelsea players ever getting sent off ever, which is probably it's definitely a reflection of how I concentrate during football matches, which, and my memory at this stage, it must be the alcohol. But the Terry one is the one. I mean, Barcelona is the one.
Terry and Sanchez have had a bit of a spat, which has been drawn to the attention of Chirrut Chakir, who's going to his pocket here. Oh, he's shown red to John Terry. The Chelsea captain has been sent off for an off-the-ball incident involving Alexis Sanchez.
I was lucky enough to be travelling with the press corps on the team flight that night, and the most remarkable game of football that you could possibly imagine, with, you know, Barcelona looking as if they were coasting it, Ramirez's incredible goal, the sending off, Messi's missed penalty, and then that, and then Torres running clear. I mean, just the staggering evening's entertainment and a magnificent achievement, given the status that Barcelona enjoyed at the time as well. And we got, inevitably when you're writing stuff up, the press are often the last people to get on, were the last people to get on the plane. So you'd often get this awkward situation where you'd have to walk down the aisle of the plane at the airport with all the players just sitting there already waiting, sort of tutting and wishing they were in the air en route back home after the game. As it transpired, there was a hold up as I got on the plane, and we were sort of joining the plane halfway down the aircraft up the steps, and myself and a colleague were stuck in the queue right by the door to get into the plane. And those were the seats with the extra legroom that Frank Lampard and John Terry always used to take. So there was this awkward sort of hi, and looking at each other. And then my colleague, who was slightly bolder than I am, sort of plucked up the courage to ask JT what provoked the little spat with Alexis Sanchez, and didn't get, just got a grunted answer. Another awkward silence. And the follow-up question from my colleague, I was dressing up for me, was, so what were you thinking? Which did not go down well at all at that end of the plane. And I've never felt more awkward in a queue to try and get onto an aircraft, and never more thankful to get up to the back of the cabin and just hide behind my seat. But there you go. Travelling with Chelsea back in the day. Wonder why we don't do it anymore.
There's definitely an Athletic long read on that in there somewhere. Before we go, Simon, what are you going to be writing about for Athletic subscribers this week? I guess a lot of it's going to be transfer based for the next 48 hours or so.
Yeah, and then once the window shut, a review of the window, sort of how I assess it, you know, whether it's been a good window, bad window, etc., and also doing a piece on the academy. Sort of just asking the question, what sort of this summer has seen a lot of academy players go. So is this a sign of things to come again? So just, I suppose, asking the question, what is the point of the academy? Yeah, so I'll be debating that.
Dom, well worth flagging up your piece on how do you defend against Romelu Lukaku, which you had some help from Nader Manua with.
Yeah, Nedham was brilliant. Danny Higginbottom, likewise. Good to talk to players who actually know what they've confronted this type of situation through their playing careers. I didn't think Liverpool were too bad against him. Matip got turned badly at one point, sparking one of the counter-attacks we mentioned earlier. But it was a very different type of occasion to the Arsenal fixture, and Liverpool obviously made a far better fist of dealing with Lukaku than Arsenal did. I fully expect him to torment a lot of centre-halves before this season is up.
Good stuff. Listener, if you're not currently a subscriber, you can go to theathletic.com/ChelseaPod to sign up now. You'll get a third off the price of subscription too. We'll be back on Thursday. Liam Toomey and Sam Parkin will join me. Amongst other things, we'll round up the transfer window and look ahead to the start of the new WSL season. Chelsea get their defence of the title underway against Arsenal. Many thanks to Simon, to Dom, and to producer Lucy. Shout out to my son as well for providing backing vocals, and also to White House Farm Nursery for their continual refusal to open on Bank Holiday Monday. Do join us on Thursday if you can. From all of us here, though, for now, it's goodbye.
Brilliant blast at the end.
Wow.
The Athletic.